Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today we're talking all about editing. I'm joined by the fantastic editor, Jenia de Lima, and we chat all about the different types of editing, how to find an editor, what to look out for, what kind of prices are involved, how long it'll take to complete, basically all of the questions that you may have asked yourself if you're in a position now to start working with an editor, or if you want to learn more about how to edit. This side of writing is hugely important, and it really does pay to learn a bit about it. So I hope that you're going to find what we chat about today very useful. Before we whip the red pens out, though, just a quick reminder that if you haven't already done so, to follow or subscribe to the show. This way, you don't miss any future episodes when they come out. And if you are on the Spotify mobile app, you can also turn on your notifications to get a little push notification when a new episode goes live. If you'd like to get involved in our writing community, which is developing into quite a special thing, I have to say, then just click the link in the description. You can join a critique group that meets weekly or bi-weekly or monthly. You can gain access to our live panel events and also chat with fellow writers who are more than happy to beta read chapters and stories and just stay in the loop with things and chat with like-minded people, because writing is a solitary thing. It's good to branch out and expand that network. If you'd like to carry on your learning beyond what you hear on this show, then check out our Patreon page. We've got lots of writing classes, we've got guides, books, everything that you need to take your writing, particularly fantasy writing, to the next level. Again, the link for that is in the description. And now it's time to crack on with the show. So get them red pens at the ready. Here's Jenia de Lima. I'm delighted to be joined by editor Jenia de Lima. Jenia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant to have an experienced editor like yourself on to chat, because we don't really talk a lot about editing, and it's so important. I mean, I always say it's where the real writing is done.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah, it's a slog though, and a lot of people hate it, and that's why we've got brilliant people like you. And I understand that you're a developmental line editor as well as a bit of a writing coach as well.
Yes. So I mostly do developmental and line editing, meaning I'm going to be looking at things like the structure, the opening lines. Do you have a compelling hook in, let's say, your first chapter? The sentences sort of feel like they're muddling together? Do your characters feel well developed? Are there plot holes? All those sorts of things.
Yeah. It's so important, isn't it? And something that we'll talk about in a little bit is the different types of editing. Because we've mentioned too there in developmental and line editing, and I've worked as a copy editor in the past, and there's loads of different types of editing. And if you're, as a writer, if you're looking to work with someone, you need to know what you're after and exactly what to look for, don't you? Yeah. So before we get into all of that, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your journey through the world of writing and editing?
So I started writing and editing, started off writing as a child with, you know, lots of those stories you look back at and cringe 30 years later.
Yeah.
But I joined my high school's newspaper and I wrote and I edited for that. Moved on to college, wrote and edited for the paper there. Then I did all the academia stuff where I wrote a few peer-reviewed articles. I used to be in a creative writing group, had some stuff published, just like, nice. You know, in local things.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it was mostly just doing academic type stuff. And I realized quickly that wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I still stuck with it for years anyway. and then gradually transitioned out just as opportunities arose and educated myself as much as possible by taking classes and things so I could make that switch from nonfiction academic work into creative fiction.
Yeah, that is a tough transition. I went through a similar one because I used to be a lawyer. So that's very formal, quite rigid and objective.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you're writing about dragons and stuff. So it's a bit of a transition. You've got to sort of learn to loosen up and stuff like that. Yeah. And be a bit more liberal with your prose and stuff, haven't you? How did you find it, Nana? How did you overcome it?
Well, so in the beginning, it was a lot of people who wanted help with essays and things, college students, high school students and the like, or I met a teacher, for instance, who offered to trade piano lessons for looking over his fantasy trilogy.
Okay.
And so that was, you know, helped me kind of ease in a little bit. But before then, I'd been doing a lot of volunteer type work where I would do basically like beta reading. Or one thing I did was I volunteered for our older daughter's school and I read literally hundreds of middle grade books and came up with questions that could be used for accelerated reader type programs where the children have to answer the 10 questions just to make sure that they read and comprehended and they aren't just saying that they read this book.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of a way of easing into it as well. But I did find that once you start putting it out there and you have other people sharing, hey, this person's an editor, it just kind of snowballs and it's easy to take off after that.
Yeah, it does seem to be like a lot of word of mouth, like recommendations seem to be the most effective. So someone in our writing group on Discord before was just saying, does anyone know an editor? And I've worked with an editor called Anna for a good few years. And I always recommend Anna. So she gets loads of work through that. So it just goes to show that people, you don't know where to look. I mean, there's like services like Readsy, which they have like lists and stuff, but I've never really found that useful. Have you got any tips for anyone wants to go and find an editor? Where would you recommend that they go and look?
I would not recommend places like Readsy only because recently in other author groups or groups where it's authors and editors together, I've seen a lot of negative experiences. Like someone will apply, and I'm not saying this is across the board.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it can be harder to vet that person and some of their experience and whatnot, and same with Fiverr. But the EFA has a directory if you're in the United States, and then there are other associations similar to the EFA in other countries. So I would say look there because it's more of an established group, and they're not just going to let someone come out and hang their shingle when that person maybe says they're an editor, but really they don't have any training or expertise, because it's more than just I enjoy reading or I know how to pinpoint issues in books. There's so much more that goes into editing. But I think sometimes people think that they could go into editing and say they're an editor based on those skills.
Yeah.
And that's the danger of going to some of these Facebook groups and whatnot, where it's just anyone can throw out their name or a website.
Yeah. So how did you find the process of sort of building your career then? You've got a few recommendations and things just sort of took off.
Yeah, so part of it is too, I started off with a very small independent press and they did do some on-the-job training and classes and that sort of thing. And then I met other people through there or people who were going to be publishing independently from that press. And then they would ask, well, do you also edit on the side on a freelance basis? And then in the beginning also, I did find a few jobs through the EFA. They have a job directory. And that's the other thing, a lot of these editorial organizations, people can submit job requests so you know that it's being targeted toward those people who have the experience. And so you know you're not going to be getting emails and messages from someone who doesn't maybe have the skills you're looking for, hoping that your editor will have. So I have a few jobs from that, but mostly now it's word of mouth. And I'd say that's pretty much been the case for the past 3 or so years.
Yeah. And it's the biggest sort of compliment to anyone really, like to get your work only through word of mouth. Because if you're having to advertise all the time, it means you're not really got much else to do. But if you're always busy and you never have to advertise, that is a really good sign.
So I try and look at it that way. You know, it's good to be busy. It means that people are happy with the work that's being returned to them.
Definitely. So how did you get into developmental editing then?
I started off with developmental editing, and that's partially because that's where I was first placed at this small press, was as a developmental editor. So most of the areas that I look at, and even now I continue to go through as many webinars and craft classes and things as I can, just because there's always so much more to learn.
Yeah.
But I think that it helped that I have been in professions before where I've had to be very analytical. So I was a statistician, for instance, for 5.5 years.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Nice.
But one of my side jobs that I did at that organization was interviewing and writing articles about people in engineering. So yeah. I still had that writing aspect tied to it. But you have to be very analytical. And the same thing, like you would know from being a lawyer and all the academic work, you have to think very carefully about everything you're saying. And is this really the most appropriate word for here? And if someone just did this, does it make sense for them to now do this? Yeah. Is this in line with what we know about this person? And I think that all that helped combine with giving me the mindset that I needed in order to look at each of those facets of a manuscript and pick them apart.
Yeah. So for anyone who's not sure about what developmental editing is, could you give us a quick definition?
It's looking at the overall structure. So it does look at things like, I think I mentioned this earlier a little bit, but your plot and believability, your characters, your character arcs. Yeah. Are your characters consistent throughout? So one example I like to give with kids at career day when I go is if you have a character who's considered shy and then they volunteer to be in the school-wide talent show, does that fit that person's character? And if so, why not? But then we also brainstorm ways that they would agree to it, you know, like they're going to win this $1,000 prize and they need it to buy this bike or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so ways you can kind of get around some of those things where it might seem like a mistake or a flaw in the writing. Believability is a big one too. So you don't want your reader to have to suspend so much belief that the story just feels ridiculous to them. And then since we're on the Fantasy Writer's Tool Shed, that also goes into world building. Do you have enough world building? Does the world building make sense? Does any of the world building contradict itself? That comes up quite often.
Yeah.
Or even then you can have too much world building. So are there areas maybe you need to pull back a little bit?
So that helps you set up the whole framework of the story, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Especially, if there's going to be a series too. So that's another part. And then, so if I'm working with someone on a series, I'll take a little bit of a different angle there because we're not just looking at the plot for book one or book two. We're looking at how these things intertwine and come together across this entire 5 to 7 book series. And if we kill this character off in book three, is that going to give us a problem later in book five when this event is supposed to happen? So it's all those things coming together too.
And if anyone out there is struggling with the sort of bigger pictures what advice would you give to them if they were undertaking some developmental editing?
Well, if they want to do it on their own first, I suggest sketching things out as much as possible and doing that in whatever way makes the most sense to you. Some people use software. If you're more visual, you can make post-it notes and line them up on a wall so you can see how the things connect.
Yeah.
I personally take a lot of notes and color coordinate them as I'm going through.
Nice.
So just look at all these different elements and how they're coming together. Make a character sheet for each of your characters. That can be helpful too. And it can also help really get into their heads and figure out why they are reacting a certain way instead of they're reacting just because you need them to react that way.
Yeah.
So that's another tip also.
Nice. I like to use a graph. And
yeah.
It's like a line chart. And what I do is I sort of start up from obviously on the left, and whatever position the character is in. So if it's in a positive position, it'll be high up on the graph. If it's negative, it'll be quite low down. And then just mark out each point of conflict that they have to overcome. And if it's a positive outcome, then the line goes up. If it's negative, it goes down. Yeah. And then you can see the sort of peaks and troughs of your story all throughout. And if it's too straight, you know it's boring.
Right. Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah, I've done that before, making sort of the graph also, but just in terms of plot, and then making the percentage points down below. So yeah, same kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Developmentally, you have to take all those things and combine them. So
I think that kind of approach works quite well if it's more of a character-driven story, I find, because you're looking at a character's emotional response to conflicts in the story, and if it's not too zoomed in on character and it's more of a plot-driven tale, then I don't think it would work very well. But
True.
You mentioned line editing as well. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So line editing is really what it sounds like, and it can also, we're looking at it and it sounds like line by line, but you're really looking at it sentence by sentence, but you're also looking at dialogue. Does the dialogue sound natural? Does it work for that character? So for instance, if you have a 5-year-old, they're not going to have the same sort of dialogue as the 87-year-old neighbor next door, and you're making sure that the dialogue matches the characters, that it feels on point for those characters. Does it reflect their worldview? That's something, too, that comes up a lot in sci-fi and fantasy. So we don't want to use a bunch of Earth colloquialisms, for instance, if we have an alien from another planet talking to someone, or if we go into another realm and now suddenly we have fairies and whatnot, they're probably not going to use a bunch of these Earth terms either.
Yeah.
And so that's something, too, that I'll query or say, is this something that fits their worldview? Would they know about this? Those sorts of things come up as well. But it's also looking at the flow and the pacing of the language being used.
It's quite a broad one, isn't it?
It feels like it, yeah, but you have to take the audience into consideration too. But this comes up more with working with nonfiction. Or, you know, who is your audience? And this can apply to fiction as well. Is it a young adult audience, or are you looking at an adult audience? So obviously the wording that you choose is going to differ between the two. And the same with how characters interact with each other and even sentence structure. So a more complicated sentence structure probably isn't going to work if you are going for mass market appeal versus literary fiction.
Yeah. That's really, all really important points. And each layer of editing is just as important as the last, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's sort of like building a building, you know? You can't just slap the foundation and then throw a tent on top and say you're good to go.
Some people try it.
Yeah, that's true.
So what other types of editing are there? We've covered two there.
There's also copy editing, and that's looking at consistency, grammar, usually the mechanics, things like, are you placing your commas correctly? Getting rid of comma splices and that sort of thing. Maybe the person heavily uses M dashes and maybe they're improperly using M dashes. And so you're going to go through and correct all those things. But also, again, if you have a style guide that you're using, making sure that it matches the rules that are in that style guide. And sometimes authors will have their own preferences that override certain aspects. So then you have to go through and make sure that those are being reflected as well. And then, again, sci-fi and fantasy, you have the joy of all these terms that the authors likely made up. All right. And names and places. Are those used and spelled consistently throughout? If we're told that, I don't know, Prince, some made-up name, has long white flowing hair, does he have long white flowing hair throughout the entire series? That sort of thing.
Yeah. I tell you what, that is so hard to keep track of. But what I try and do, get in the habit of doing it as well, this is a good tip for anyone out there, is open a spreadsheet as you're writing. And anytime you mention anyone's name, even if they're a side character or if it's a place that's far off, it's never going to get mentioned again, just write it down in a spreadsheet. And if there's any sort of descriptive sentence that you've used, just copy and paste it in. And then you can see dead easily, you don't have to go Like, there was one time, the reason why I started doing this is because I forgot a name of a character and I couldn't remember whereabouts in the story it was. And it was like 300 pages and I had to go through every single one and
no.
find. So it's just a waste of time. And if you just organize, it just
Yeah.
saves, it's so much hassle.
Which leads into style sheets, which is what you were just talking about. Yeah, they're so handy. And again, that helps too if you have a series. So you can say, this character so and so, page 39, book 5, dead. Make sure that they don't like accidentally become resurrected in book 6, that sort of thing too. But yeah, I do the same thing you do. I just copy and paste from the manuscript because then there's no issue with, did I remember that correctly? Is that what the author meant to say? No, that's word for word what's written there, so I know it's okay.
And I find in fantasy as well, the amount of similar sound and names that you create. And as long as you've got a nice list of all different ones, I think George R.R. Martin felt guilty to that problem, didn't he?
Yes.
With, he had to change it in the TV show, didn't he? But Usher and Asher, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, when they sound too similar out loud versus on the page, yeah.
Little things like that, it's good for keeping track of. So is that about all the different types of editing?
Well, then there's also proofreading, and it comes after
Yeah, of
formatting.
course.
And that's someone who's going through and just making sure there are no more mistakes because you never know what can happen after the author's had it in that last round. And I'm not saying that the author will introduce mistakes, but it's possible again something was missed.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And sometimes it's just seeing it in that clean copy and not having the other distractions on the page to help you zero in and think, oh no, I didn't italicize that movie title when I should have, or something along those lines. So then they go through and they do that. And editing adjacent a little bit is book coaching or writing coaching. So you do see it advertised a lot with other editing skills, but it's really more of a separate task or a separate job. And so that's exactly what it sounds like. Someone is stuck, maybe, for instance, or they're worried about a certain area of their writing that they feel could be stronger. And so then the coach helps them, well, how can we get past this hurdle? What can we do so that, for instance, you do have stronger opening lines with your books? And I usually give my clients homework.
Nice.
So there's really a strong push to keep doing these things on a weekly basis, which also helps, of course, with bettering your craft because it's just like anything else. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And then we discuss those and why it worked, maybe why it didn't work, where they're still struggling. And I always make sure that we tie up wherever they're at before we move on to another skill set within the writing area. So that's just a quick example of what that would be like.
Yeah,
And
that's a
then
great
book
approach,
doctoring is
yeah.
where it's more of a hands-on approach with revising the document for the client.
Yeah. No, it's a great approach because most of the time writers, it's just them and there's no one else to help. And if you've got an agent who an editor who's like analyzing your work and understanding it on quite a deep level, then if they can offer some feedback and support like that, it's invaluable. And it sort of leads quite nicely into the next question is, which is quite broad, is how important do you think editing is?
I think, well, and I'm not saying this just because I'm an editor, but I do think it's extremely important. But part of that, again, goes back to who are you writing for? If you're only writing for the joy of writing, you don't really care about having an audience. And there are people who write and then self-publish, but it doesn't bother them if no one reads it. It's just the idea of I've written a book, I've put it out, I'm done. My happiness level with this task is 100% complete. And then that's fine. So maybe editing isn't for you. You don't need to really worry about editing and everything it entails. But if you're writing for an audience, then I do think that it's vital to the process because the editor is going to be able to know about your genre, the tropes within that genre, the expectations for it, what the reader will expect from it, because really the reader is who you're writing for.
Yeah.
And you don't want to put a book out and spend all that time on it and then not have reviews or the accolades that you're expecting. You can also have that narrow perspective because it is your work and it is just your viewpoint. And an editor can help broaden that and make sure that what you're trying to say is getting across the way you want it to get across and that there isn't room for confusion.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. It is, you can't skip on it, can you? Because ultimately down the line you suffer and
yes.
You won't get that response that you want when you finally get it out there. And yeah, you just got to take your time. I mean, I was doing part-time, but novel I've just finished, that took me about 18 months to edit.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's because I refused to skip on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the editing actually took longer to do than write the actual book. But for me, that's the most important part because that's where it all comes together. That's where you make sure your characters make sense and all the arcs tie in nicely. And
yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm definitely in the editor's camp. But I completely get why so many writers don't enjoy it. And I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you work with a lot of writers. What kind of reasons have you heard over the years?
I have heard probably more than not say that they don't really love the editing process. But I think that goes back also to how much the manuscript is suggested to change. So if I'm suggesting that we move around two chapters or remove a plot point significantly earlier into the story before we reach that conflict at the end, that sort of thing. Obviously, that's going to take a lot longer and deal with additional work on the author's part, although I do make myself available the entire time if they have any questions, because I'd rather help them before they get to that point and possibly make more work for themselves, and then later me on round two. But there are some who seem to really enjoy it and they get excited by it. And I do have authors who will routinely say, or we've worked on multiple books together, I can't wait to get started. I'm so looking forward to this. And yeah. Then you'll have those rare authors who they're done in a few days. And it's not because they're rushing. You can tell they really processed it and they just sat down and then hyper-focused for hours.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like with anything else, there's so much variance in how we see a certain task or a job before us and then how we take it in.
Yeah. You mentioned there about like second drafts and stuff. I mean, do you have a bit of a process that you follow?
Yes. So I always do two rounds. If the author doesn't want to do two rounds, that's also up to them. But so when I receive a manuscript, I read it first.
Yeah.
And I make notes to myself as I go along in a notebook. And they're just very broad general notes. Then I go through and I read it again and I start applying those notes and pulling out areas that might need to be worked on, but also areas that are really, really strong because I want the author to realize what they're doing really, really well also.
Yeah.
I think that's just as important, maybe even more important because
definitely.
Sometimes when you, it's just like anything else in life, sometimes when you aren't as strong in one area, you can compensate for that by taking the areas where you do really excel and then just sort of blanketing over the other stuff. You know, maybe if you are better at character-driven work, don't make such a heavy-handed plot. Maybe we should focus more on internal conflict and let's just broaden that instead. So that's just an example of taking something that you do really well and then applying it throughout for areas where maybe you're not as great. And that's the same thing for like if you're not so wonderful at making fighting scenes. Well, maybe we don't need to write fighting scenes. Maybe we can find a way around this or we can tighten them up so that we're not spending so much time on them.
Yeah.
Because sometimes some of these things, they're not resolved in the first round.
Yeah.
Or the changes they make aren't quite what we were going for and there's a little bit more where we could push it further.
Yeah.
And so that's why I prefer to see that second round just to make sure, one, that everything is cleared up that was brought up in round one. But then also making sure that everything that was applied is done to the ultimate benefit of the novel and there's nothing more we can do.
Yeah, definitely. The more passes you can do, the better, isn't it? And like if you're adding content in, that is technically going to be like in first draft format.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to go back and check that and make sure it's okay and get it up to scratch.
Yes. So, and so sometimes I will do a third round with someone where we're just going over the stuff that was added in.
Yeah.
Again, for those same reasons. I don't want to have someone spend all that time working on it and then it's not really given the full amount of focus and attention that it really needed.
Yeah. It is tough, though, editing something so big as a novel. I mean, how long would that usually take you to do? I mean, you're a professional.
So it depends on the word count and it depends on the genre. For instance, like a young adult romance isn't going to take as long as an adult epic fantasy where we're pushing, you know, into way past 100,000 words. So it can take anywhere from a week to a month just to do that first round of editing on a manuscript.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot of work, definitely. And
it is, but it's, you know, it's fun. It's enjoyable. And I think one thing that makes it so fun is because you're seeing all these new stories. It's not the same thing over and over and over again, like with so many other jobs.
Yeah. And it's satisfying at the end then to see the finished product.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
And seeing the cover and seeing it in print, and now you can buy a copy and seeing your authors attend all these events where they're selling their books and being on picked for panels. It's all fun. I love it all.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was going to ask you about editing skills. Like if anyone out there is looking to become better with their editing, what advice would you give them?
So a lot of people will say go to editing classes, and I do agree with that. There are a lot of books that are considered sort of like a gold standard. There's the Copy Editor's Handbook, for instance, if you're interested in copy editing. The EFA, other places like that, they will have editing classes. Some of the really well-known editors also have classes and webinars, like Louise Harnby has classes listed on her website. Jane Friedman has webinars that she does quite frequently. And then Jennifer Lawler, I think, is the other one who also does classes that just remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But reading books on writing craft helps too. It really does. And it gives you a different insight than you're going to get from just the editing classes.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think I've got more craft books than any other genre.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got something new to teach you, haven't they?
Oh, and then Brandon Sanderson, if you watch his series, I know I've only seen a couple, but he has some really excellent YouTube videos for someone who's stuck on a certain area or feels like I could do better with this part of my writing or my world building isn't quite where I'd like it to be. His videos are excellent and very interesting too. They're not just, you know, the boring monotone, here's what you need to do.
You know, like what I loved about them, when I quit my job as a lawyer and I found them videos and it was like a full college course.
Yes.
So I was like, all right, then I'm going to sit down. I'm going to treat it like I'm at college again. And I was making notes on all the lectures and stuff like that. And it really worked. Like when you dedicate yourself to learning and improving your craft, you do notice the results. And it's great then to take that next step and work with an editor who can coach you at the same time as improving your manuscript as well. And yeah, I don't think there's any negative side to it, to be honest. Unless you find a bad editor.
Ideally.
Yeah. So we mentioned a few places earlier, like the EFA. Are there any other places that you recommend or things to look out for anyone who's looking for an editor right now?
You can also go to, if you have a local writers group or one for your geographic region. So I know like here in the States, a lot of the individual states will have their own writers groups and they almost all have a resources page. So you can look at that resources page and I've never seen one so far that has not included a list of editors.
Yeah.
But you can also go into a group for writers of your genre. So, you know, say on Discord or Facebook. And again, like you were saying, just say, hey, does anyone have an editor they recommend? And let them know what kind of editing you're looking for too. So if you think that you only want to have commas and so on looked at, let them know you're looking for a copy editor. But if you know that you'd like to go a little more in depth of that, ask them, do you have a developmental editor that you use and recommend? Because that's going to be a big part of it too. Someone might recommend an editor for you, and then they don't do what you're looking for. So it's not really going to help you in that regard. I mean, it might later on when you're at that step, but it's not going to help you at that exact point. So always be specific too.
Yeah. What about the costs involved? Like, can you give anyone any guidance on like the sort of standard rates just in case anyone gets ripped off?
Again, that does vary. And I have seen a huge range of pricing. And again, the pricing too, it depends on the editor. So some will use a per word price point that they use. Others will bundle their services so you can save money. But you, if you see a really, really cheap price, I would be hesitant. So if someone says, for instance, they're going to do it for like $200 for an entire developmental edit for your 120,000 word fantasy, you know, try and figure out what the hourly rate would be and then ask yourself, why are they charging so low? There are going to be people who are starting out and maybe they're looking to build their testimonials, and so they're willing to do it for that reason.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things to take into account. It's not one of those things that has a definitive answer of you should always pay this much money. The range should always be within this amount.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really work that way, just because, again, people have different life circumstances as well, and that can apply to how much they're charging. But as a general rule, yeah, I would be hesitant if someone's prices were so much lower that it stood out like an outlier. So, but again, if they, if you know that they're new, or if they maybe announce in their listing that I'm trying to build testimonials, or maybe they haven't worked that much in their that genre, and because they don't have that level of expertise yet, they're willing to lower their prices for their first, I don't know, you know, five clients who hire them for working in that genre. That would be a different scenario.
Yeah. So what's like a reasonable figure then, would you say?
Well, again, it depends on the word count, and then also
so,
what
say
kind
like
of editing 100,000
words,
for.
Like for like line editing and developmental. Like for your service, for example, what would you charge for a developmental and line edit for like a 100,000 word novel?
If we're just going without even looking at a sample, maybe I'm just going to assume that it's pretty clean. Everything, this person knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
About $1,400.
Yeah.
And that's on the low end, but I also work fast.
Yeah. So it just depends on the editor, but like that seems like a fair figure. Like I've worked with editors before who have charged around that figure. So I think, yeah, that seems quite reasonable. And at least that gives people a bit of an idea. So if they get quoted like 6,000 or 7,000, then they know they're a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Just be careful.
Right. Yeah. That's true too, because you might have people approach you and say, I can do this and this for you. And then the price is exceedingly high compared to what you might see. There are rate charts that some of the organizations put out as well. And you can use those rate charts to sort of calculate and see, okay, well, am I being given a fair price? Is this on the high end? And again, I would hesitate to ask around just because you don't know who these other editors are that people are hiring. You know, I've seen people say I had an editor and then it ends up being like their high school English teacher. So obviously those rates aren't going to be equal to what you would expect from someone who does it as a profession.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, it's been fantastic talking with you. Thank you so much for giving up your time. I've really enjoyed this little chat about editing.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, we don't talk enough about editing, and I think we've gone over it pretty comprehensively there. So thank you very much. If anyone wants to learn more about you, where's the best place to look?
They can go to my website, which is jenyaedits.com, and then from there I have links to my social media accounts. So if they want to follow me on Instagram or hook up with me on LinkedIn, whatever that connection is called.
Nice. Jenya, thank you so much. It's been lovely. And I'll put all the links in the description for anyone to check out. And we'll hopefully we may have you on again soon, and we'll take a deeper dive into editing again.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Awesome. A big thank you again, Jenya. It was such a brilliant chat. I learned so much, even though I've worked as a copy editor for a while. I've edited novels, short stories for myself and for other people. You're always learning something new. And that is one of probably the most alluring things I find about writing, is that you're never, ever going to be stuck on something, because there's insights out there waiting to be found. And lots of different ways to do the same thing pretty much, and everyone can do it in such a creative way. So keep that learning hat on. And I always say this to people in work, especially when we're assessing writers and deciding whether to keep them on or to help them improve, we've got to tell them the moment that you start assuming that you're a good writer is the moment you become a bad writer, because you close your mind off to what other people think and what other people's the advice people offer. So never do that, because you get complacent and your writing starts becoming sloppy. Unless, of course, you're a genius and an international bestseller, in which case you can tell us all to do one. And that is all for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, give us a subscribe or a follow. This way, you're not going to miss any future episodes. And why don't you just set a little alert notification too, so you get a push notification when a new episode goes live. If you did enjoy today's episode, please give us a review on iTunes or a rating on Spotify. It helps an awful lot in us promoting this podcast to the wider world. And another way you can help us do that is by sharing this episode on social media or telling anyone who you think may be interested about what we do and what we chat about. And I'd love for you to get involved on a more deeper level than just listening to me ramble on and the guests sharing their wisdom. And you can do that by joining our writing community. There's nearly 450 of us now. We all meet on Discord. We do have a Facebook group, but Facebook's gone a bit weird, so we now just tend to use Discord. And it's a great place to meet fellow writers from all parts of the world. And you can ask questions about the industry, discuss ideas, how to get published, how to find editors, a bit like what we were talking about today. You can join regular critique groups and gain access to live community-only events, such as our panel, which is going to be taking place on the 20th of August. And it's going to feature the brilliant Karen Hewler, who was on the show before. And we're going to be talking all about characters. So don't miss it by joining our writing community today. The links for everything I've just mentioned there are in the description. And that is all. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on the 28th of August with a brand new episode. And until then, keep on scribbling.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.